You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Before I welcome tonight's guest, I invite you to support my work by purchasing my book, Tales of a Zany Mystic. It's available in paperback or on Kindle at Amazon Books. Tonight, my guest is PMH Atwater. PMH is one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies, having begun her research in 1978. Her work spans over three decades of scientific research with thousands of adults and children, with another decade of consciousness research. Tonight, she returns to discuss her 11th book, which has just been released, and it's called Children of the Fifth World, A Guide to the Coming Changes in Human Consciousness. This is a roadmap for everyone, especially for parents and educators. So let's welcome PMH to the show now. Hi, PMH. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, Lance.
Well, you know, I loved your last book, and we talked about that in the last show that we did, the last two shows. This
yes,
one
we did.
Is really... it really expands the horizons way out there, and it also is a rather disturbing because it has an edge to it about the possibilities that we face, and I thought it would be interesting to start out by finding out what prompted you to put a pen to this latest book.
It was my near-death research, specifically with children. I kept noticing that children born the usual way anywhere and everywhere today and even the last few years, last few decades, seem to match or nearly match children who'd undergone a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the characteristics, the traits, and I looked at that and I thought, oh my goodness, what's really going on here? You know, how do I explain this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I dug in and did a lot of work about all this stuff about, you know, evolution, genetics, mm-hmm. the new children. All these labels about indigo and crystal and starseed and all this other stuff to see if I could make any sense out of it. And not only did I make sense out of it, not only were there patterns and incredible patterns,
mm-hmm.
There were really a lot of information about what's really going on and what's seems to be in the future. So I, you know, wrote the book, Children of the Fifth World. You know, it's not just a normal book, Lance. It's a primer. And I'd originally called it that, but my publisher didn't think people today would know what a primer is. So they changed
right.
that to a guide. You know,
right.
a primer is where you get all your basic information. That's
mm-hmm.
your foundational information is in a primer, like your primer for learning how to read. All
mm-hmm.
your basic foundational information for learning how to read is in that primer, or your primer for numbers. Again, all your basic foundational information is in that book. So this being a book about evolution and genetics, I wanted a primer, so
mm-hmm.
that's what it is. So all your basic foundational information is there on any subject concerning evolution, genetics, and the new kids and where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I love the way it begins, too. You establish very quickly the seven root races and the esoteric teachings of soul evolution. It begins, in Chapter 4, you affirm that, yes, we have a soul, which is one of the biggest hurdles that people have, it seems, to coming to this information, is the idea that we might continue on after death and that we might actually have started out prior to birth. So this, in the beginning chapter, you bring up some of the information that Edgar Cayce brought through and go into the different root races, and we're apparently, according to your research, there are seven root races, and we are at the fifth. Is that correct?
Well, as near as I can tell, according to all of the different prophecies, all of the different traditions, even if you go back long before the 1800s and you get into the older esoteric traditions, they were not called root races then. And for the benefit of the listening audience, root is R-O-O-T, like the roots of a plant. So a root race is your basic genetic gene pool, your basic gene pool. And supposedly we're supposed to have like seven large, specific, very targeted types of gene pools or evolutionary models or phases we go through as human beings. It doesn't seem to matter what tradition you study. They all talk about seven of them. Of course, seven is considered a sacred number, so, who's to say for sure if they're really seven? But if you go back in time and you take a look at the various evolutions of the human family on the Earth plane, it fits this old esoteric model. So I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking with those old models because they're working. And, I don't know if there's going to be more than seven, but
right.
At least so far they're working out.
Right. Yeah, it does seem that way. And, of course, there's a lot of theoretical research about 2012 and on being the beginning of the entry into the fifth dimension. And that is something that parallels some of this evolutionary work that you've been doing.
Well, we're talking about fives there. When we're talking about the fifth world, we're talking about an emergence of, you can just take a five on everything. There's the five types of intelligence. There's the fifth brain. There's the five basic forces. Certainly the fifth dimension, the fifth communication wave. The fifth brainwave frequency, it's like all of it, the fifth element, all of this stuff, it's just coming up now, and the last several decades, it just all seems to be rising and blooming and coming forward at the same time. And I look at this prediction that we're moving into the fifth world, or more fully, I truly feel we've been in the fifth world for some time, or at least with the fifth root race. But now it's more fully developing. And when we look at those fives, all coming at the time that the fifth root race is here, the fifth world is spreading, it's just like, well, I don't know about you, but for me it's like prophecy manifesting. It's like all of these stories and tales are sort of leaping off the page and showing themselves, revealing themselves in the world we're living in. Mm-hmm. So it's no matter, for me at least, it's no longer a matter of esoterics. It's a matter of in your lap, in your home, in your yard, in your school. I mean,
in your face.
it's practical, everyday, in your face world.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's no longer esoterics or predictions or maybe. It's all here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wrote the children, or that's among the reasons why I made a primer out of Children of the Fifth World. So people could get a real, you know, grab on this. And one of the things that's real interesting about the fifth root race, those kind of children, those kind of people, they're a little bit irreverent. And so the book is a little snappy.
Yes.
It's a little irreverent. Did you notice that?
Yes, I love it. I love
it's
it.
Sort of a little pie in your face kind of stuff.
Yes. Absolutely. No question about it.
Well, you know, when we're talking about root races, I think for the base, for the listening audience, I think we need to define that. I think we need to take a good look at what we're talking about and the pattern that we're talking about. And that pattern, the basic profile on the plus side and the basic profile on the minus side, the good and the not so good, I think we need to take a look at that. On the plus side, when I'm talking about these kids, I'm really talking about a lot of people, not just today's children. They're intelligent, even if they're flunking and can't spell in school. These kids are smart. About one-third are geniuses, even if learning disabled. They're music-oriented, very rhythmic, unusually creative, spiritually minded, intuitive, psychic. Many can remember past lives. They're excellent with math, and don't let them fool you about this. They're good at math. They're natural healers. They're ready-to-go entrepreneurs. They're irreverent. They're quirky. And they have unique beliefs. They're visionary problem solvers, and they're very knowing, volunteer-minded humanitarians, groupies who move as if part of a collective. They often attend night school instead of just sleeping, and that is in addition to dreaming. They abstract at very young ages. They're spatial learners. It's a fusion of sexes and gender mixing. They are multisensory kids who are multi-channelers and live in a multiverse. So, you know, these kids don't fit in the usual kind of boxes we like to put people into. They just don't fit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we want to look at the minus side, the problem side, or the challenging side with our new breed, they're impulsive and impatient. They're the quick click kids. They feel entitled, overconfident. They're the ultimate consumers. Underlying anger. They have a very little tolerance for lies or manipulation. They prefer the astral and synthetic worlds. They're highly sensitive to drugs, snack foods, and metals. Highly sensitive to toxic, incoherent electronic energy.
Mm-hmm.
They do not assimilate nutrition well. They have no concept of authority. They need mentors, not bosses.
Mm-hmm.
They appear wiser than they are. Self-deception is a real issue. Sensitive to trickster energy, possession, attachments. They do not understand the effort needed to process or refine or earn a degree. Things, for instance, like are copyrighted or trademarked. They don't understand that kind of stuff. They expect things to come to them. They do not recognize boundaries, even that of skin. Clothes are more important than language. Their greatest fear is silence. They just can't quite handle silence. And I'd like to put this into some kind of perspective before we go any further, this idea of these really smart kids. if we take a look at genetics and you know the models and the patterns, we can trace these very unusual children going back even to the time of Jesus. There weren't that many, but there were a few. Mm-hmm. At any time and every time that there was a renaissance, even, you know, anywhere in the world, you know, there's been more renaissances than the European Renaissance. It's like almost as if every continent and major civilization structure throughout history has gone through a renaissance. And every time that happens, that there's that sudden bloom or lift in society, it's always peopled by and pushed by this pattern, this same model of individual, what is often called the fifth root race. It's that same pattern. And they begin to come in even more in the 1800s, and especially by 1840, about the 1840 on, but even in the 1800s. So when we're looking back at the Transcendentalists, the New Thought movement, those were all fifth root race types. So we're not just talking about children here. We could be talking about your great-great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea of these unusual thinkers, very creative, very knowing, very independent, this goes back a long time. Mm-hmm. And they begin to kind of fade out in about the 1920s. We didn't really see that many more of them until, maybe about the 1960s, 1970s, they began to come in again. And by 1982, and I'm going to stick with 82. You know, you could say the 1980s, but I'm going to stick with 82 specifically. That's when the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. And you know, for the most part, all the children on this planet are now in that template, that type of human being. Just look around you. Genetics is happening. The big lift is happening. That evolutionary jump, that quantum leap that has been predicted for a long time now, it's happening. This is it. Those floodgates opened, and for the most part, those are the kids that are coming in globally, you know, all over the world. It's that fifth root race. Some people say that we're moving into a time of 12 chakras in the body,
right.
Lightweight body. Of course, look around at all the people that are heavy, and you kind of shake your head. What do you mean about lightweight body? But that's what's predicted. Spiritual essence, the blending of male and female. And by the way, hermaphrodites are on the rise. We're getting more and more children being born one in every 100 births in Germany have both genitalia, so their hermaphrodites are certainly on the rise in the United States. It's one out of every 1,000, so they're
and
coming in.
I think you mentioned, too, that in nature the sexes are able to change, that fish can go from one sex to the other.
Well, you know, we're starting to see that in nature, and yeah, what's really, one of these hang on to your hats kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And this is just pure science. If you're just tracing, how do you pronounce it? Mitochondria, did I pronounce that right?
Mitochondria, yes.
Yeah. If you're just changing that, or just checking that type of DNA, if you're just tracing that type of DNA, the earliest female on this planet with that type of DNA began about 150,000 to 250,000 years ago. But the earliest male began about 60,000 to 100,000 years ago. Do the math. That means females have been on this planet about 150,000 years longer than males.
Oh, interesting.
So how are we procreating? You know?
Yeah.
Could the females do it without the males? I don't know. It can be done in nature. So
Right.
You know, it's one of those conundrums. You look at that and you laugh, and then you have to stop and get a little sober.
Right.
And get a little more serious and look at that again and say, oh, well, oops, wait a minute here. What is that saying about human beings?
Oh, absolutely. In the fifth chapter, you talk a little bit about the breakdown in the parental models that is going on. And it seems that a lot of the stereotypes that we see today are based upon a certain kind of model that has been encouraged. As far as, you know, there's a man and a woman, and you have children, and you do this and that and the other thing. And as you point out in the beginning of Chapter 5, the family is changing quite a bit. And you mentioned that there are gay men with adopted children, lesbian with children fathered by a sperm donor, and it goes on and on and on. And we have all these different new ways of parenting that are not going to go away.
No, I mean, we have all different kinds of moms and dads and children, and they're not even related like they used to
be.
You know, it's like, wait a minute here. Whoa.
Well, Aldous Huxley wrote a book about that, if I remember correctly. It seems like a million years ago when I read it, but it was called Island. And he brought forth that idea that the group raised the children. There was no particular father or mother. That was the whole island had shared the responsibility of parenting. So it seems like what's coming in, these kids, and you share some personal stories of these kids, and they are absolutely mind-blowing in their thinking and the way they see things and what they can do. And I mean, it's truly quite startling in a very exciting kind of way, and it seems like they're here to kind of upset the apple cart. They really don't care too much what anybody thinks about what they're here to do.
But, they don't.
They're
going to
do it,
whether
we like it or not. So we can go crying and screaming out the door, you know, oh, this is terrible, I don't like it. But it seems like it's a lot easier to try to understand what these changes are, what they are, and you make a wonderful, you just lay the groundwork in each chapter for what's going on every level multidimensionally, which is absolutely amazing.
Well, you know, I like to, I'd simply like to restate my premise here with the new kids. Because I think it is so important to look at the basic premise of what's going on, and I'd like to just verbalize this. Evolution's nod is stacking the deck, forcing us to find ways of living beyond the struggle and crush of polarities. Mm-hmm. Our children, in league with the situation at hand, are arriving with their DNA encoded as if mirrors, reflecting back to us every nuance of feeling and relationship imaginable, every aspect of business, culture, politics, religion, entertainment, invention, so we don't miss a single thing. The end of things. We are now witnessing the ultimate battle between good and evil is an awakening to what we see in the mirrors our children provide. We have come to this, a chance to start over, to repair and rewrite history. And that's exactly, Lance, what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
These kids mm-hmm. are mirroring back to us every cockeyed, silly thing we're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they are.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like clowns, and they're acting it all out, mirroring mm-hmm. it back to us, so that we have to look at it. And you know, we complain about them, and yet all they're doing is mirroring back to us who
mm-hmm.
we are, and mm-hmm. what we're doing, and
yeah,
what we've
absolutely.
Been doing for years. And
yep.
and they're, you know, they're like this big exclamation point that says, stop.
Uh-huh.
Look. Stop and look. And our kids are just, they're letting us have it. It's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in chapter 7, yeah, I so agree with you that you know, it's time for the denial that permeates all of our upbringing in our lives to be punctured, really. You know, there's too many hot air balloons going, you know, floating around here, and we're on a wrong track, as I see it. I mean, a lot of different wrong tracks. And you bring up some of these minefields in Chapter 7, especially about some of the things that are being done to kids and with kids. The sex slave industry is estimated.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah,
that is
yeah,
the third yeah. largest industry in yes. the world.
Yes, $32 billion. And that might even not be accurate. You could probably goose
no,
that up.
No, that's probably on the low side.
Yes, yes. And so the people that are involved with this have to be involved at the highest levels of government, military, and royal families, I'm sure. Secret societies and the rest of it. You know, we hear about it from the Vatican. You know, the scandals that just flip. They're like dominoes falling. I keep wondering how long is it going to be before they actually get to the bottom of this. You know,
it's just what's going on now with drugs, with money, we're in the digital
yeah.
world,
yeah.
with sex. It's just enough to blow your mind, and
mm-hmm.
and that could derail this big jump we're having in evolution. That could
mm-hmm.
actually derail us.
Mm-hmm.
Our children's appetite for sex and drugs and the digital world,
mm-hmm.
We need to somehow tamper that down and have some real talks with these kids and show them what's
mm-hmm.
happening. You know, especially the digital world. If
mm-hmm.
we keep going the way we're going now, if just children keep
yep.
Using digital devices
yep.
before puberty at the rate they are doing it now, they could and probably will lose their genius.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's just like a cocaine high.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
it scrambles the brain in the same way that a cocaine high does. You
mm-hmm.
know, our technology has now exceeded biology.
Mm-hmm.
Our biology can't keep up with our technological world. And we're just tromping right along and galloping right along and just loving it. Boy, everything is instantaneous. This is absolutely great. We love it. We want more, more, more. We want
mm-hmm.
it smaller and better and more slender, and we want to be able to do more with less. And
mm-hmm.
and we think this is absolutely great. And until we start taking a look at our health and our relationships, and
mm-hmm.
our ability to get along with each other, our ability to even feel good about ourselves, and
mm-hmm.
and we begin to realize, whoops, this is going beyond our bodies and our brains' ability to keep up and to
oh,
be
absolutely.
Able to handle it.
Absolutely. I was surprised to read in the chapter titled Quicksand about even children's cartoons and family fare average around 16 startles per half hour of viewing time. Now, you mentioned that there's a startle is something that is designed to, you know, get your attention.
And well, that's like what keeps you awake. You know, the brain kind of goes to sleep.
Sleep, right.
Yeah, or dozes off in about 3 to 4 minutes or so. So our wonderful television people, script writers and stuff, they will plan in and put in what is called a startle, something to wake you up.
Yeah.
So it's loud or it's violent or somehow, you know, it
shocking.
Startles you.
Yeah, yeah. And,
but every time they do that, that increases cortisone in the body.
Yep, yep.
And the next thing you know, you're in trouble, and especially
mm-hmm.
with kids.
Mm-hmm. And it has all kinds of side effects, especially the worst one that I pick out is the decrease of empathy and the conditioning that occurs towards violence. And as you point out, 70% of those who watch entertainment prefer violence, and that is a really huge media tool right now.
It doesn't that just floor you? And,
it does.
And those are facts and figures.
I didn't make
that up.
Yeah, no,
you know,
I know.
That's just strictly stats or, you know, your statistics.
Yeah.
You know, if we really are honest and really look at our preferences, our movies, our television shows, what is it that we prefer?
Mm-hmm.
70% of us prefer violence.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, look at our presidential election that just concluded finally. Most of the ads that were everywhere were mean. They were attack ads.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what supposedly gets people's attention. So you know, it's all going on the same premise. We want something that will startle us. We want something that gets the juices flowing. And what seems to get the juices flowing is fear or anger. So, you know, upset the people and you got them in the palm of your hand.
In the palm of your hand, absolutely. And another thing that occurs as a side effect to that is that it reduces the ability for creative thought and imagination, which is your next chapter, the front door to spirit, are the imaginal worlds.
Yeah. And notice that it's not imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the imaginal worlds. There really is another order.
Yeah.
And the imaginal worlds are real.
Yes.
Imagination is something you make up.
Yes.
But the imaginal worlds are real. And it's almost as if there's another order, a hidden order. Some people call it, you know, a corollary development to the human order. Some people say, well, it's the elder race, it's the old ones, it's the elfin clans, it's the varied angels. But it's even far more than that. There's this imaginal realm that exists. You know, that's what J.R.R. Tolkien wrote about in The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And if you ever read his letters, and I did, there's a book published on his letter that gives many of his letters and talks about him as a person. And he made it very clear in his letters that he never made up any of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, he visited those worlds and those areas as a reporter. And when he came back to this world, he simply wrote what he saw and heard. He was a reporter, not a creator.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very clear to him. And he made it very clear in his letters that he didn't make this up. He was simply a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tells me that Tolkien caught on to the imaginal realms and realized how real they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the kids know that, especially at night school. when they're not really dreaming. We think that, you know, these lovey huggy bear little kids are in bed, and you know they're having all these dreams. Well, a lot of them are attending night school, and these night schools, as near as I can tell from the kids, are real schools with real teachers and real students, and they go to school, all kinds of different students, and they learn, they're taught, they get assignments that they need to work on in the daytime. Let me give you a little example of this that sort of blew my mind. I was in a shopping center, and I was walking, down one of these long halls, and there was a mother and her little boy sort of next to me, close by. And way down at the opposite end of the hall was a mom and dad and their little boy. And they were sort of walking toward us as we were walking toward them, but they were way down. And a little boy down there, way down the hall, yells the name of the little boy next to me. He then yelled the name of the other boy, and they ran to each other like long-lost buddies.
Wow.
And they started talking about night school and the classes that they had and the assignment that they were given. And they were comparing notes as if they had known each other all their lives.
Wow.
Well, of course, the parents were just shocked as I was. The mother next to me was local, but mom and dad and the other boy were tourists. They were just passing through.
Wow.
There's no way these two boys could have known each other's name.
Right.
And there is no way they could have compared notes about a school they were both attending at night, much less compare their assignments for the day.
Yeah, right.
And I just stood there and I thought, oh my word, we're not talking about dreams here. We're
right.
not talking about imagination here. This is something else.
Uh-huh. Yeah, amazing stuff. One of the things that you explore too in later chapter, and many people have talked about, is the extraterrestrial possibility, and you do delve into that a little bit. But what you're saying transcends any particular type of you can't label it. In other words, what's going on is so far beyond our ability to tap into unless we go there ourselves.
We can't walk this road saying, well, you're from Sirius, or, the Galactic Command, or you're obviously a reptilian, or you come, you're one of the higher beings from Sirius, and, all this stuff that we hear.
Yeah.
It really isn't quite like that.
Yeah.
And if you take a look at what the children are saying, and especially children who've had near-death experiences, if you take a look at what they're saying, it's quite a different take. And a lot of these children know for certain that they were once an asteroid, or they were once a standing wave, or they were once a bit or a piece of the universe, and that they came to this world because this world was sending out SOSs, like planet Earth. Mother Earth was sending out little distress signals saying, there's a lot of changes going on around here. I really need some help. Yoo-hoo!
Mm-hmm.
Everybody come aboard, SOS, I need some help. And
mm-hmm.
so we've got all these beings coming that maybe never, ever were in human form before. Maybe maybe this is their first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a whole different way of looking at it. And this idea of just ships and, grabbing kids and this guy. It's not quite what we think. So I just began to open that door I intend to write a book about it one of these days, but not now. I'm not ready yet. But I wanted to at least open that door to another way of considering the subject.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. And one of my favorite guests and friends is living in Sacramento. Her name is Amelia Benz, and she has come in without any prior incarnations. And that was one of the things that startled me about her story, was that she was aware of it. And that was, you know, that opened my eyes to all these kids that are coming in who
they're different.
I
give a really good documented story of that in my book, The New Children and Near-Death Experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this boy from South America. And it's absolutely stunning. It's absolutely stunning what he was talking about when he was just a little bitty kid, what he was drawing, all these kinds of things. He made it very clear that he came from the sun, S-U-N, the sun,
mm-hmm.
that star. He was part of a planet,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it never had human form before. And they're a lot like that. And, but his case, his father, what was his father, a psychologist, or maybe that was his mother, and his dad was a psychiatrist. Anyway, his parents were professional, and they documented this from the time he could talk. He didn't eat the same as anybody else. He had a lot of problems with clothing. He didn't know what clothes were.
Uh-huh.
He didn't understand boundaries. He didn't know what skin was.
Yeah.
He really had a tough time wearing his body.
Yeah.
Because he didn't understand what a body was.
Yeah.
And again, this is a documented case, and there's a lot of verifiable information with it. So if you want a really good case, not just somebody remembering things or, I had this dream or, I had a near-death experience and I'm suddenly back and I'm remembering this and this is a real truth about me. This is a real-life documented case of actually two children, but especially one.
Mm-hmm.
Who, in their behavior and in their memories from the time they could talk
mm-hmm.
with professional parents and with doctors looking at them, are this very different type of being, and they don't relate to human beings at all. So it's a
mm-hmm.
Different way of looking at that kind of thing. Yeah, I kind of want to jump in here because we haven't touched on this, and it's got to be touched on. It's got to be faced, and that's this stuff about labels. And
mm-hmm.
and when I'm talking about labels, I'm talking about things like indigo, crystal, starseed, psychic, rainbow kids, all of this. And now we've got a new one just invented. It's called Golden Indigos.
Oh,
And, Twyman and all
this
stuff.
And you invented one yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I call them Ascended Blues, and I apologize for that. That was
right.
But, you know, to explain why older people fit this pattern, of course they fit this pattern. They've been coming in since the 1800s.
Right.
Why wouldn't they fit this pattern? Please take everybody, everywhere, take all these labels and toss them, every one of them, including this newbie that there's going to be a film about called Golden Indigos. Toss that one, too. Get rid of them all. Then take the characteristics all of these labels supposedly define, bunch them together, and you have the pattern of the fifth root race.
Hmm.
You have the pattern of the fifth root race. Let me tell you something. When the tide comes in, all boats rise.
Hmm.
It's affecting everybody on this planet. There's nobody it is not affecting. And this idea that it's just according to their aura, and if they have an indigo aura, you know, they are indigos, phony baloney.
Right.
When the tide comes in, all boats rise. And just because somebody might have an indigo aura does not make them saints. An indigo aura is also the color of someone who is very violent. It's also the color of someone who has no feelings and is very violent. So we've got to be careful here in jumping on any kind of bandwagon and tooting our horn and running off with these labels. And all they are is marketing tools. You know, they make somebody a little bit of money. And that's okay, really. And you know, the good part of all this labeling is it brought to the attention of the world that something different is happening with our children. So in that sense, all of this stuff has been good. But, you know, we need to move beyond that now, take a real look at what's really happening, and be honest about what's really happening. You know, it's happening right under our noses. Our whole world is changing.
Well, it seems like it almost has to happen under our noses because there's so much of the old paradigms that are trying to control things and direct things in a certain way that is not really effective. It's stifling, and it keeps us from expressing our creativity and freedom.
Well, remember that the new kids are coming in as if mirrors. So they're mirroring back to us all of our mistakes.
That's right.
And they're saying, you know, take a look at this.
Among them,
look at the societies on planet Earth, huge societies of people where there is no tradition for a debate. None. Whatever your position is, if it's different from everybody else, then they try to put you down or destroy you or imprison you or run you out because there's no tradition for debate. One of those countries is China.
Yeah.
Have no tradition at all for debating or discussing things, none whatsoever. A lot of your Muslim countries, they don't know what politics is. They don't know what debating is or discussing things or having a real choice. They don't understand what that is. So our children are here to mirror that and say, take a look at this. It's one of the reasons why I'm so taken by the sacrifice of Malala, you know, that wonderful Pakistani little girl who has mirrored back to especially those parts of Islam that are terrorist, you know, Al-Qaeda and all the rest of them. And she's showing the whole world how insane and barbaric this is. This has nothing to do with Islam. Islam is a beautiful religion. This has nothing to do with Islam. It's not in the Quran.
Right.
You know, these are corruptions by clerics of a very beautiful religion.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And we've got this young girl, Malala, who's been shot just because she wanted to go to school. You know, so our new kid, she's one of the new kids. Our new kids are stepping forward, and they're saying, no, stop, look at this. And they're doing it all over the planet.
It's multicultural and multi-generational as well, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
I mean, especially it crosses all cultures.
When the tide comes in, all
right.
boats
That's
rise.
That's right.
The tide is here, Lance.
No kidding. Thank
it's
goodness.
Coming in, and all the boats are rising.
One of the lines I like from your book that ties into this is you say that there's not a leader alive who is prepared to handle this crop of citizenry, not politicians, heads of state, religious figures, or corporate executives.
There's not one of them. Nope.
Not one. Right.
Not one.
And I think that says a lot, you know.
Well, we didn't recognize it coming. You know, our nose is in the sand. And, you know, we prepare and we learn and we grow according to established methods and methodologies. And we don't look ahead. You know, there's no one really looking ahead and doing their stats and understanding how things are changing. You know, that's what caught us in the last election. You know, Romney thought he was going to win, but the whole Republican order, all of them or most of them, forgot to look at the stats and how our nation has changed. We're not the same nation we were even, you know, 8 years ago.
Right, absolutely. No question about it. No question about it.
And they didn't look ahead. They didn't look at what is happening now and what is projected to happen. And it's catching us on every level.
Oh,
we're not looking ahead.
Oh, no kidding. On every level, as you said, in politics, in religion, in every area that is exerting a major control paradigm on the planet, they're all crumbling.
Well, look, what's really exciting is that the downturns are moving in rhythm with the uplifts, the rule of thirds. One third of our new kids have both gene mutations that build a better brain. One third in standard IQ tests score genius. One third of autistic kids who take the Raven's IQ test, which tests for fluid intelligence, are genius. 70% of the kids with autism 70% of the kids with autism are male. It's almost two thirds. One third are female, and it's the reverse with dyslexia. Although the female cases are underreported, it's suspected to be 70% of the kids with dyslexia are female, and one third are male. So take a look at that. One third have no sense of living a full life. Two thirds have no intention of ever marrying, going to college, becoming parents. One third are profoundly gifted. One third are quite intelligent, intuitive, creative. One third are too violent to handle. It's the division of thirds and of course, also triangles that strengthen construction, materials, design. We have the Holy Trinity, which is based on the, you know, thirds. The third spiritual law is karma. The third spiritual tradition is the golden rule. The thirds are the rhythmic proportions of sacred geometry and the golden mean. It's nature's preference for harmony, beauty, and balance. Thirds are the base. The rule of thirds, Lance, is the baseline of universal order.
Wow.
all of the major uplifts and downturns with the new kids are going in thirds. That tells me that maybe there really is God's plan. Maybe there really is a greater plan. Certainly, we are on level. We are on time. We are in order for something greater than we are. There's another hand at work in the world today. We are not behind. We are not ahead. We are on time, and we are in order. The rule of thirds. You know, read that book when we talk about the homogenocene and all of these things that are happening now that people really aren't looking at, that are huge and massive. We can document. They're there.
Well, you know, that seems like a perfect place for us to segue into out of the show and have people get your book, Children of the Fifth World.
And get on my website, www.pmhatwater.com, and get my free monthly newsletter. Sign up for it.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you, PMH, for being here again. And it's always a delight to have you. And I love your book. And it really is a must-read for everybody.
Thanks, Lance. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.